For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. This is the MJA podcast. Betty Davis once said, "Getting old is not for sissies. Neither is caring for them, as any general practitioner will no doubt tell you." One of the hardest conversations to have with an elderly patient is the one about giving up driving. Associate Professor Catherine Wallace is a GP on the Gold Coast and a member of the University of Queensland's Primary Care Clinical Unit. She and her colleagues James Matthews and Geoffrey Sperling have written a perspective for the MJA which suggests the development of an objective toolkit to help GPs with this difficult conversation. How do you negotiate giving up the most obvious symbol of independence and maintain a working relationship with your elderly patient? Here's Catherine with a few suggestions. Is it a difficult conversation to have?
I think it is a difficult conversation to have. I mean, it's such a difficult thing to weigh up. I mean, sometimes it's obvious when somebody's health, you know, makes them unable to drive safely, but often it's not. And often people's health, you know, as you know, can sort of wax and wane.
Yes.
And so it's a very difficult thing to do because it has such profound implications for older people, particularly people living rurally or, you know, where there's not good public transport options for them. It can be quite a profound change in their lives, if and when they have to stop driving.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy thing to do, that's for sure.
Is the process nationalised? In other words, is there a standard across the country for assessing for fitness to drive?
No, there's not. Not in Australia. Every state has got its own form that it's developed and also requirements of when older people, you know, for a private car driving licence, when they need to start having their medical assessments. So in Queensland, for example, it's an annual medical assessment with your GP from the age of 75 years. But that's certainly not the case in all other states in Australia or the Northern Territory.
Are there conditions that GPs must notify the state's Department of Transport about?
The must notify is only in some states. Otherwise, the reporting duties are not mandatory.
And what kind of conditions are we talking about?
Again, it's not, you know, one specific condition. It's if in the GP's opinion, you know, a certain medical condition that they are aware of affects somebody's ability to drive, then they should inform the authority, or may inform the authorities in some cases, or must in other states.
So what tools do GPs have now to help them assess an older driver?
Well, there are lots of screening tools that have been developed over the years, some GPs will use, you know, one tool and another GP will use another tool. So memory tests are the most common kind of tools that GPs use, in addition to, you know, assessing somebody's vision and just knowing them personally and assessing their sort of health and well-being or knowing the patient. So there's not one particular tool that GPs must use, except I think in every state you have to pass the visual acuity test.
So that's not very helpful really for GPs, is it?
AusRoads has produced a very extensive document that does set out you know, what the medical standards are for driving. But I guess one of the things that is a struggle in general practice is that you're very time pressured and you don't have time during a consultation to sort of read the fine print to understand exactly what the rules are. So you are reliant on your clinical judgment and your background knowledge of what
of the patient,
you know, constitutes fitness and not health well enough to drive. So
what about patients with dementia? How hard is it to assess them for driving?
Whatever condition there is, it's hard to know exactly when the threshold is.
But
certainly people with mild cognitive impairment, you know, can be quite safe on the roads to drive, you know, within there, and they know their limits and drive within that. But, I mean, I guess with whatever condition, whether it's cognitive impairment or physical impairment or whatever it is, it's a sliding scale that slide very obviously and then suddenly fall off and become unacceptable or unsafe. You know, things can wax and wane a little bit too. So one day you might be safe, the next day maybe not. So it's a difficult assessment to make in the best of times, I think.
I'm chatting with GP Catherine Wallace about assessing older patients for fitness to drive. Her co-authored perspective on the subject can be found at mja.com.au. Did you know the MJA has a weekly online news magazine? Insight Plus publishes every Monday and is a mix of news and opinion. All the content is open access, and you can also subscribe to our weekly email newsletter. Just go to www.insightplus.mja.com.au for more information. Back to our chat. In your perspective for the MJA, you talk about the possibility of an objective tool that might be handy for GPs. Does any such objective toolkit exist?
Well, there's been lots of research over many years trying to develop, you know, the perfect tool to sort of come up with the perfect number that will say, you know, yes, safe, no, not safe. But that is an elusive goal, I think. There will never be a perfect tool. I think one of the things that we have learned is that a combination of tools or a toolkit comprising several tools is better than just any single tool to help inform clinical judgment on this issue. But again, one of the issues that general practice has struggled with is that some tools require special equipment or access to special tools or expensive paraphernalia or time-consuming something or other, which is not feasible in the sort of context of general practice. And even if it were, I mean, the gold standard or the sort of the best, most accurate predictor is the on-road driving test with an occupational therapist. But even that is likely an imperfect predictor of future crash risk. I mean, because whatever tools we have in general practice are imperfect predictors. You think of even blood pressure gives you a measurement of something, and you can say if somebody's blood pressure is sort of high or not, and that will give you some information about their risk for having a stroke or a heart attack, but it's an imperfect predictor. So any toolkit that we manage to get that's feasible to use in general practice will also be an imperfect predictor. But I think the important thing is that it could produce a measure, a number, that can then be used as a communication tool. Because one of the things that GPs think is really important is preserving their relationships with their older drivers, patients. And if you've got a toolkit that you use every year, if you're doing the health assessment every year, that could give you some sort of basis upon which to have a discussion about gradual deterioration over time. Let's start thinking about this and planning for eventual driving cessation. We're all going to get to that point. So I think that is probably the main advantage that a toolkit could have. It could be used as a communication tool, facilitate those difficult discussions in general practice, and to help preserve relationships. It's not going to be a sort of perfect you're safe, you're not safe to drive. Nothing ever will be. But it can inform clinical judgment for those GPs who might be less experienced or not know the patient so well, you know, thinking of GP registrars or something who might be filling in for doctors and doing these forms. And it can also be used as a communication tool to demonstrate change over time.
And it is important, isn't it, maintaining that relationship? There's no point distressing your patient to the point where they never come back.
Well, that's right. I mean, the other thing that is always a possibility for patients who are very determined to drive would be to take their form away and go and see another doctor.
Do a bit of doctor shopping, yes.
Yeah, so preserve, you can't do anything as a doctor if you don't have, or as a GP, if you don't have a relationship with a patient. So, yes, preserving relationships is absolutely fundamental to general practice.
You talk about in your article a model out of Belgium that's showing a little bit of promise. Tell us a bit about that.
For a toolkit to be feasible in the Australian general practice context, you know, it needs to be something that can be used fairly quickly and easily and not have any special equipment, not require any special equipment. The toolkit that was developed by a Belgium group consists of the visual acuity using a Snellen chart, which pretty much every general practice would have, I would say.
Yep.
The functional reach test, which was developed many years ago now and doesn't require special equipment. You basically get somebody to stand up and then lean forward and you measure how far they can lean forward. And the road signs recognition test, which people sit down and they have to match up what the road sign is with the picture of the road situation. And the good thing about that is that it's got face validity with patients, with older drivers, because sometimes people might think, well, a memory test, I might have failed the memory test, but that doesn't mean I can't drive.
So has that toolkit from Belgium, has that been tested at all here in Australia?
No, it hasn't, but it would be a worthwhile project to do, I think, to look into that. I mean, you could test a number of different individual tools and see which one matched best in the Australian context. But the advantage with these particular tools is that you know, they could potentially be readily available in Australian general practice people to use. So, and they don't take too long, you know, to complete all those tests. It's not like it takes half a day or anything like that.
Thank you, Catherine. Good topic. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.